Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Well, we knew it might happen. It's happened. The 14-year-old girl's remains had sat in the trunk of a Tesla for weeks in a Hollywood street for 7 months. The biggest question in this case wasn't who, it was whether anyone could prove how she died. The body was too decomposed, too compromised. A medical examiner couldn't determine the cause of death, and without that, you don't have a murder case. You have a concealment case. You have a body in a trunk and a whole lot of ugly questions with no legal teeth behind them to sink into anything. Well, guess what? That has changed. According to ABC News, investigators now say they can prove that the death of Celeste Rivas Hernandez was, in fact, murder. They haven't said publicly what broke the logjam, what piece of forensic evidence or testimony or digital record finally gave them what they needed. But that's coming. Whatever it was enough. Because on April 16th, LAPD Robbery Homicide Division officers moved on a house in Marmont Avenue in the Hollywood Hills. And David Anthony Burke, the 21-year-old recording artist known as David D4VD, with nearly 4 million TikTok followers and over a billion streams on Spotify, walked out in handcuffs. He's being held without bail. No one else was taken into custody. And the case goes to Los Angeles County District Attorney's Major Crimes Division for filing consideration. This is where we are at. Celeste Rivas Hernandez would have turned 16 this coming September. She never made it to 15. So we didn't have a grand jury indictment. We have the DA in this case, giving this to the Los Angeles County District Attorney Major's Crimes Division on Monday for filing consideration. Could things change? Yes, that could very well happen. What exactly happened here? Again, we have a lot of gray area in this that we do not yet know the answer to as to why the grand jury did not convict, as far as we are aware or understanding right now, or give the bill to go arrest him. Why was this moved upon in a different direction, a different way than a grand jury making an indictment? It's a good question. It's an interesting question. Doesn't necessarily mean anything weak about the case or particularly strong about the case. It just seems to be the path that this case is going down. Let me walk you through how we got here, because this story didn't start with an arrest. It started with a smell. Celeste was the daughter of a Salvadoran immigrant, or immigrants, really, a family, living in Lake Elsinore, California, a working-class community in Riverside County, about 70 miles southeast of Los Angeles. She was reported missing 3 separate times in the final year of her life. According to the Riverside County Sheriff's Office, she was a 13-year-old, 7th grader, when her family last reported her gone in April of 24. She made contact with her family one more time in May of 24. After that, silence. Her mother told reporters her daughter had a boyfriend named David. Her brother told NBC that Celeste went to see a movie with David the night she disappeared and never came home. Now, I have a thousand questions about the parenting that's going on here that allows all of this to occur. How present are we, mom and dad? I think that's a lane that we need to take a little closer look into, and I think we will in the coming weeks and months. Surveillance footage and digital evidence later confirmed she was alive as late as January of 25. Investigators believe she died sometime in the spring of 25, and then on September 8th of 25, one day after what would have been Celeste's 15th birthday, workers at Hollywood Tow called the LAPD about a foul odor coming from a vehicle on their lot. The vehicle was a 23 Tesla Model Y with Texas plates, registered to David Anthony Burke at his family's address in Hempstead, Texas. It's been abandoned on Bluebird Avenue in the Hollywood Hills for weeks, sitting there at this point in time, long enough to get ticketed for violating a 72-hour parking ordinance before finally being towed on September 5th. Officers opened the front trunk, the frunk, and found a black cadaver bag. Inside were severely decomposed remains. A second bag was found beneath the first. According to court filings, the remains were not intact. The Los Angeles County Medical Examiner later identified them as Celeste Rivas Hernandez through dental records. She was wearing black leggings, a tube top, a yellow metal chain bracelet, and stud earrings. And where was David on September 8th? On stage at the Fillmore in Minneapolis, in the middle of a Withered World Tour, is what it was called, performing songs like Romantic Homicide, a track that had gone viral on TikTok and peaked at number 4 on Billboard's Hot Rock and Alternative Songs chart. His music video for another song, One More Dance, featured imagery of a person being placed into a car trunk. A representative said at the time that David was aware of the situation and was fully cooperating with authorities. He canceled the remaining U.S. tour dates shortly after this. The European leg was scrapped. Promotion of his deluxe album was paused, and then the details started surfacing. The kind of details that don't let you really look away. The medical examiner found a tattoo on Celeste's right index finger. It read, "Shh." David has a matching tattoo in the same spot. Her mother confirmed they had been in a relationship, but here's the detail that kind of reframes everything about the case. According to TMZ and Fox LA, David's friends allegedly believe Celeste was a 19-year-old student at USC. She was reportedly seen at age-restricted events. She was not 19. She was not a college student. She was 14. Seventh grader, eighth grader, right around that age. Think about that for a second. And the question of how the people around David came to believe a child was a grown woman, how that lie was maintained and who maintained it and for how long, is one that deserves a long answer from a lot of people who have been very quiet. The timeline may go back even further than most people realize. A user named Celeste was allegedly present in David's official Discord server as early as 2022, when she would have been 11 or 12. Other users in that server reportedly referred to her as his girlfriend. In the summer of 24, after Celeste had already been reportedly missing, David allegedly posted that he was in a song crisis. An anonymous user responded with her full name, "Drop the one with a missing girl, Celeste Rivas Hernandez." He reportedly never replied. Her name was right there in his server, and nobody did anything. 10 days after the body was found, on September 18th, LAPD executed a search warrant at David's Hollywood Hills rental property. They seized electronic devices, including a computer. A private investigator hired by the property owner later reported finding a burn cage incinerator on the premises. David's manager terminated the lease. He moved out on the night of the arrest itself. 7 months later, NBC4 reporters observed detectives leaving the Marymount Avenue home carrying evidence boxes. But the detail that it's going to haunt this case more than any other is a trip. According to multiple reports, LAPD obtained tracking data placing David in a remote, deserted area of Santa Barbara County in the middle of the night during spring of 2025, the same window investigators believe Celeste died. He reportedly spent several hours there. LAPD publicly confirmed in November 25 that they were investigating this trip and believed it was connected to Celeste's disappearance. TMZ's Harvey Levin reported the tracking data was confirmed by an LAPD source. Whatever happened on that stretch of road in the dark, investigators apparently believe it matters enough to build a case around it. And through all of this, the cooperation narrative was quietly falling apart because by November 25, LAPD sources told NBC4 that David was no longer cooperating with the investigation, directly contradicting what his representative had said in September. A secret grand jury was convened this same month, led by Deputy District Attorney Beth Silverman. Witnesses included David's manager, Robert Morngroth, of Mogul Vision, his friend and streamer Neil Langston, and eventually his own family, his mother Colleen, his father David Sr., and his brother Caleb, who tried to block the California subpoenas allegedly through a Texas court in February 2026. The judge declined to intervene. The family was compelled to appear in Los Angeles. What they said behind closed doors remains under grand jury secrecy. Meanwhile, LAPD has obtained a court order in November sealing the medical examiner's findings, including autopsy results and cause of death. Judge Craig Richmond granted the security hold. And a move that tells you everything about the tension inside this case, the medical examiner's office publicly pushed back, saying the hold prevented them from serving our community with full transparency. The people whose job it is to speak for the dead were told by law enforcement they could not speak. That friction between transparency and strategy has kind of defined this investigation from the beginning and made it very confusing and made a lot of what has been going on for the last 6 months utter speculation. The music industry didn't wait for an arrest to make its judgment. Cali Uchis, who had a collaboration with David called Crashing on his debut album, pulled the song from streaming and said publicly that Burke was not her friend. Icelandic singer Lofi quietly removed another collaboration. Olympic figure skater Alyssa Liu changed her competition routine because it featured one of his songs. EA Sports pulled his track from Madden NFL 26 without a statement. Crocs and Hollister pulled their joint campaigns. Interscope Records effectively froze his career before a single charge was filed. The entire ecosystem around David had already made its call. So what has changed now here? April 16th, when the arrest went down. Well, two things happened at once. First, investigators reportedly solved the cause of death problem. ABC News sources say the biggest hurdle had been the condition of the body, decomposed and compromised, making it extraordinarily difficult to determine how Celeste actually died. Something broke that all open. They haven't actually said what yet, but they now say they have what they need to prove this wasn't concealment of an accident. It was murder, according to them. Second, LAPD chose not to wait for a grand jury indictment. And this is a part I find particularly interesting. The grand jury has been sitting on this case for roughly 5 months. No indictment came. So robbery homicide went a different route. What's known in California as a Ramey warrant. That's a pre-compliant arrest warrant where a detective submits a sworn declaration of probable cause directly to a judge who signs off on the arrest before the district attorney has filed any charges. It bypasses the DA entirely. It's the tool investigators use when they believe they have enough and can't afford to wait. So what basically pushed that? What tipped the scales is the question, because it's been sitting here for quite a while. What made it go whoo so quickly that we couldn't wait for the grand jury to digest that information and issue their bill that way? What was that? We don't know. We don't have the answer to that question. That, again, is utter and pure speculation. But that's one of those answers to questions I am certainly waiting to hear the answer to. And look, these sort of things do happen regularly. This is not super out of the ordinary. Not everything takes a grand jury for an arrest to take place. But there was some sort of triggering event that put us here. And we'll find out. That probable cause declaration, the document that would explain exactly what evidence pushed LAPD over the line, again, not been made public. The medical examiner's report is sealed by a court order. The grand jury proceedings are sealed by law. And now the arrest warrant declaration is also not public. Three layers of secrecy sitting on top of a no bail arrest that has not yet produced a criminal complaint. The public knows that David Burke was arrested for the alleged murder of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. The public does not know the specific evidence that got him there, at least not as of this immediate recording. There's still a lot of secrecy here. LAPD Captain Scott Williams told the California Post, "We did the best we can to keep tabs on him, but once we developed probable cause to arrest him for murder, then we were on him pretty diligently." TMZ video showed tactical officers approaching the house using a loudspeaker, ordering surrender. Rolling Stone sources at the home said Burke was completely cooperative when taken into custody. Both accounts, yeah. True, but the approach, armed officers, loudspeaker, tactical gear, tells you how seriously LAPD assessed the risk. Was it a realistic assessment? I don't know. I don't know what they were expecting, but they certainly were taking it seriously. That's what that action tells us. The defense team responded within hours, and their statement deserves a careful read. Attorneys Blair Burke, Marilyn Bednarski, and Regina Peters said, "The actual evidence in this case will show that David Burke did not murder Celeste Rivas Hernandez, and he was not the cause of her death. There has been no indictment returned by any grand jury in this case, and no criminal complaint filed. David has only been detained under suspicion. We will vigorously defend David's innocence." So this is an interesting step. That was the defense team's first public statement on the case. And now you understand why they led with no indictment and no criminal complaint, because this was a Rammy warrant, a pre-complaint arrest. The DA hasn't signed off on anything yet. The grand jury didn't hand this down. A detective convinced a judge, and that's it so far. The defense wants you to know the difference, and legally the difference does matter. Of course, a defense attorney is going to be painting David in the best possible light possible. That is their job. But I'm going to caution you, with any case, as quickly as seems the knee-jerk reaction is on so many things to be, "Ha, they got him." Yeah, they did. We knew that there might be an arrest at some point here. But what can they prove? That's still the question. Because if this were a case that had just, out of the park evidence, just this is, we got him, dead to rights, an arrest would have been made a long time ago. It took a long time to get this arrest, which in a lot of cases tells me is, evidence that may be up for debate a bit, which is what a trial is for. Again, that's my opinion. That's my speculation. I don't know either way. I don't have an opinion either way of if he's guilty or innocent. We're going to wait for the evidence, and there's simply not enough of it yet. It's a very tricky, very bizarre case. This isn't as cut and dry as, Gilgo Beach or something of that nature, where, it's set up like that. It's not Koberger. What happened here? I think that's a big gray area, but hopefully we can get to that. I was going to say, as we go in, I know we've been talking about this for a while, keep an open mind. Keep an open mind. I'm going to. I think we all need to on this. So there's a difference. There's a difference in the defense of him, of David, wants you to know that. They certainly want you to know that. The DA hasn't signed off on anything yet. The grand jury didn't hand this down. A detective convinced a judge. That's it so far. It's not that he didn't know her. It's not he wasn't involved. It's not he was never in that apartment or he never had been to Santa Barbara. Specifically, what has been said by the defense, he was not the cause of her death. That is a defense already carving out its territory. Conceding nothing about the car, the apartment, the relationship, what was done to the body, the tracking data, while denying only the single allegation that carries a life sentence. That framing is deliberate, and it tells you exactly where this fight is headed. Maybe the bigger crime, well, I mean, someone's dead. I can't say the bigger crimes. The biggest crime here is someone's dead. But was that even a crime? Was the death part of a crime? Or is the more chargeable actions against David involving concealing a death, which that in itself is a crime? Her death may not have been a crime. It may have been natural. Not reporting it, finding ways to cover it up, that is a crime. It's not a life sentence, but still it is a crime. So what are we talking about here? Is it murder? Is it concealing a body? Is it all of the above? David's parents issued their own statement through an attorney. David's parents believe in his innocence and support him wholeheartedly. The same parents who fought grand jury subpoenas in a Texas courtroom 2 months ago. So, Monday, depending on when you're listening to this or watching this, we're talking specifically about the 20th of April of 2026. That's going to be the single most important day in this case since September 8th of 25. The DA's Major Crimes Division will review the evidence and decide whether to file formal charges. Under California law, once you're in custody, prosecutors have roughly 48 hours, not counting weekends, to file or release. If they file, David Anthony Burke faces a murder prosecution that will play out under a national spotlight. If they don't, he walks out of that jail, and the defense team spends the next 6 months telling everyone who will listen that LAPD arrested a man, the grand jury wouldn't indict, and the DA wouldn't charge. There's no middle ground. But here's what I keep coming back to on this, and I think it's what a lot of you keep coming back to as well, because this was never really a story about a pop star. At Lake Elsinore, a neighbor named Kylie Cortez built a memorial for Celeste. NBC4 spoke with her on the night of the arrest. She said she started it because Celeste deserved justice. She had been, or it had been rather, 220 days when she heard the news. She said she got chills. 220 days. That's how long it took between finding a child's body in a car frunk and putting someone in handcuffs for it. And are they doing it for the right reason? Do they have the right guy? Is there a crime? And we want to find a villain. Are we finding the right one? I'm asking you. Tell me in the comments. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was reported missing three separate times. She was allegedly in a grown man's Discord server when she was 11 or 12 years old. The friends allegedly thought she was a 19-year-old college student. She was missing for roughly 17 months before her body was found. Her family, immigrants from El Salvador, living in a working-class town in Riverside County, spent that time watching a secret grand jury, a medical examiner under a gag order, and a defense team with the kind of resources most families never see. And the only reason any of us learned her name, the only reason we are here having this conversation, is because someone left a car parked on a Hollywood street long enough to get a parking ticket. And a tow yard worker noticed something that didn't smell right. That's how the system found Celeste Rivas Hernandez, not because anyone was looking for her. Which, again, I got some questions about family life. And we're going to do a little digging over there. And I'm sorry for your loss. That is horrible. But I'm sorry the story of her being a runaway and nobody really knowing where she is, but she's kind of back home for a little bit and she's kind of not. What the hell is going on there? what the hell is going on in that house? I don't know. I'm not accusing him of anything criminal or bad, or I don't know. I just don't know, because this isn't normal. This isn't healthy. There's some triggering reason why this girl's not going back home, why she's finding more comfort to be hanging out with David than with her family. And I'm just not, I don't know. I'm not convinced here that, maybe convinced is the wrong word. I'm not understanding or seeing evidence of a stronger desire to find the girl while she was missing. Why is that? Am I missing something? Tell me if I am. So I don't want to cast aspersions in an area that don't deserve them, but I've been watching this case now for a while, and that area has struck me as very odd. I'm not saying there's anything illegal. I'm just saying, what's going on? It feels like a bankruptcy of some sort, and I don't know if it's moral, ethical, parental. I don't know. Too busy providing, working, and you don't have time to watch the kids. I don't know. I don't know the answer. And I guess that's what's making me question what the hell's going on over there. I'm not trying to cast accusations or anything. I'm asking why? How did this happen that there didn't seem to be the urgency that one would put on a missing child? It just seems off. I have a daughter the same age. I don't think there'd be anything I'd be doing other than looking for her if she were missing. And here it feels like she was kind of an afterthought. At least that's the vibe that I've gotten from all this. And I know vibes aren't facts. So again, I'm asking the question, if anyone can fill in those blanks better for me, that'd be great. Obviously, all individuals that we've been talking about are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. This is an opinion piece. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in, and we will continue our conversation there. There's a lot to come here. We're just about to dive into the pool. Hope you'll join us. Press subscribe. We'll continue the comments or the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
It's happened. We have an arrest. David has been arrested. The 14-year-old girl's remains found in the trunk of a Tesla at a Hollywood tow yard. 7 months later, the man whose name was on that car walked out of a Hollywood Hills home in handcuffs just yesterday, arrested on suspicion of murder. But this didn't come from a grand jury. It didn't come from a criminal complaint. LAPD went straight to a judge and moved on their own, arresting him on suspicion of murder. We don't have charges yet, and the defense of David has been very quick to point that out. The question isn't just what do they have, it's what finally pushed them over the line. And to begin our conversation today, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, as always. And it's Fun Day Friday, and coming to us raw and real and actively in a police chase right now.
Oh my God, that's really good.
Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us on the road. Thank you, Jen, for making the time to be here with us. I know it's been a crazy day for your travels, but always so much appreciated.
That is dedication, Jen.
Let's start with this. So it wasn't the grand jury that issued the bill. It was them going to a judge saying, suspicion of murder. Can we arrest him, judge? Jen, I know this does happen, you know, fairly regularly. It's not super unheard of or anything. But what's the difference here when we have not a grand jury, but the method to get him in cuffs?
Well, that's such a great question. So essentially, you have three ways typically to charge: by indictment, by information, or by criminal complaint. However, you can also charge, or I'm sorry, you can get somebody in custody two other ways. One way is if you see the person who has committed the criminal activity afoot, you can take them in custody and detain them for up to 48 hours and then levy charges. And you can do it this way, and that is go to the judge and get a suspicion of murder backing on this, and they're going to have 48 hours to officially charge him. I would look for a criminal complaint coming after this.
And it goes into all the way into, so 48 hours business hours, which means over the weekend he's going to be sitting in jail likely. Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, so Jen, we were talking beforehand, and when this came in last night, you know, my behavior side starts working, but you have much more experience on the crim side. So what I was curious about, what are your thoughts about what their intent is here? Because everything I'm looking at, again, you know, I'm the stats and averages kind of guy. I'm not seeing a whole lot of blip here when it comes to like an intentional type homicide. We might have had something accidental. We got, you know, young kids. We got stupid stuff going on. Maybe some panic escalation. I was curious about your take on that. And also, do you think they might have brought him in to start applying some pressure to see what kind of leakage he will give?
Well, it's interesting because he is known, he's been under the suspicion of murder now for months. This is 7 months old, and about halfway through, they announced that he was their chief target, if you will, or person they believe, chief suspect. And he ran away to Texas, if you recall, and was living, I think, with mama, or at least over in that neck of the woods, transferring his property over in her name, things along this line. So when you look at that, I was asking myself, how was he arrested in LA? And I can tell you that oftentimes this is when a move like this happens. I know personally, I was involved in something like this where we literally arrested six guys in a restaurant, no complaint, no warrants, no anything. Actually, two got away. We got them a short time later. But we arrested them the same way. Was the prosecutor happy? Absolutely not, because that put them on full drive. But he knew we had the probable cause to arrest them. They were the main people involved in a cell of the Cali cartel, Medellin cartel that we were taken down. So nevertheless, that's when these things happen, is when you get them in pocket. And so I was wondering, why was he there? And was that the fact that he was in LA? Was that what tripped the wire to go ahead and have them do this imminently?
Yeah, I guess that's the big question I'm wondering about here is you know, why now? Why not? Was there some sort of urgency that we couldn't wait for a grand jury to indict and the DA to bring the charges directly like that? Or what would be the reason for we're going to go get him right now? Like something seemed to have tipped the scale here and created some sort of sense of urgency. At least that's why I'm reading it as a layperson on the outside. Is that an accurate way of understanding it?
I think it's very accurate. There was a reason. And I think part of it was, again, not that they couldn't extradite him from Texas, but were they concerned about him getting ready to flee more, you know, internationally or something along those lines? And or just getting out of pocket in the United States, which is not the hardest thing to do. So it seemed to me, I wondered if it was the fact that he was in Los Angeles in their grasp, in their venue.
And also, I mean, I'm an LAPD fan when it comes to their homicide group. I know one of the psychs with them. They're really, really good. So I think that actually is very good for this case.
Let's talk about some of the actual evidence and kind of what got us here. Santa Barbara County, in the middle of the night in spring of 2025, is where they claim, LAPD claims that they had tracking data showing DVD, or David, being out there in a remote desert area for a period of time, for a handful of hours. Kind of an odd spot to stop for really no reason. But I mean, people go out to the desert for all sorts of reasons, you know, none of which maybe involve murder. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, look at the Half of the Eagles music. It was
or you got Heisenberg.
Yeah, or Heisenberg. You're either Don Henley, Heisenberg, or maybe David. But I guess what exactly And I guess how strong of a piece of evidence is that is a piece of tracking of just the data of he went out to the desert in 2025, middle of the night. Yeah, odd, I guess, kind of. But then, you know, he's a young man and kids go out for drives and do weird shit all the time. And it doesn't necessarily mean something. There's a dead person connected to him. Makes it a little weirder. But just on its own, is it anything, or are they reading too much or too little into that?
Well, the problem is that's not all they have, right?
Yeah.
It's not just that he went
to one piece. Yeah, it's one piece of
many. It's one piece, but the biggest piece is that he has his dismembered girlfriend in the front of his trunk.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem, and it was parked about a block or so away from his house that he was renting, and that they know they have the person on camera that parked it there. That then the person who parked it there, and the rest of them load up in a van, literally right after it was parked, or in a bus, and they start going on tour. We've got all of that information. Anytime there's a dead person in your car, probably going to be looked at or be under suspicion. After that, remember, he got another Tesla, bought a red Tesla, like in February, March-ish. You know, mm-hmm. They believe she was there for a very long time. And I don't necessarily mean in the trunk. I don't know what they did with her in the interim, but at some point she was in the trunk. We know she was severely decomposed. There's no doubt about that. That's been made evident to us. So anyway, of course, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, his writings. I mean, he wrote a song called Celeste. He did the romantic homicide where he's all bloody. He's got handprints on him and put somebody in a trunk. I mean, this guy was just begging to have law enforcement look at him. We have months of people testifying before the grand jury, and I believe a lot of that testimony is going to be incriminatory. And then finally, we have his best buddy that just only a couple of weeks ago turned on him mm-hmm. and came forth in social media and said, basically, the gloves are off. And I think that's probably the big piece that's going to be one of the linchpins in this case.
Yeah, no doubt, because when you look at how these things typically play out and you look at what we know so far, the likelihood of this being a solo act is really remote. Other people knew, people were involved, especially at this age, I think. Again, there's always outliers from these things, so I'm be curious also about who else was involved. But again, as we've seen in all these other cases, the more people that know, the more the likelihood is that someone's going to flip at some point and give it up. So I think, as people are even saying in the comment section too, it's like, that's probably what happened here.
Yeah. And I 100% agree that more people are involved. We actually, my husband and I did a little video to show how difficult it is somebody. I know. But I mean, I wasn't stiff or anything, just to put me in a bag. Of course, we were trying to show that she was dismembered. But beyond that, how difficult it is even for a bigger man to lift somebody. And David was about her size.
Yeah.
People, and I know it's really gross and crass to talk about. People underestimate how difficult it actually is to move a limp body, that's passed. I mean, it's really difficult because there's no grab holds. I mean, it's a lot of weight typically. And granted, I don't think she was, but again, it's not an easy thing to do.
I don't understand. I lived on a farm for a very short period of time, and I had a deceased pig that I had to move once. And oh my God, I'm like, I do not understand killers. just that alone is like, why would anyone serially do this?
Tony, I think it's a great point to bring up. A little weird, but great point in the fact that when you have a first timer that doesn't have a rep at this is the kind of stupid that happens. And that's where these data points are leading to, first time, inexperienced, planned, not planned. That's how all these things play out because, until you experience these things for the first time, you're confronted with chaos that you didn't expect, like that.
Yeah, I know. You're completely right. Because unless you've experienced that, you may think, it's a, I can move that around. Like, yeah, good luck. It's not.
It's not as easy as it looks in the movies.
No, it's not. And then concealing it. That's the other thing. And obviously, we've heard the story of Neil Langston, who's turned on him. There's all that. But David continued, you know, to operate in his world for quite a while after Celeste Rivas Hernandez was missing. There's people that are speculating. There's been reports contrary to the medical examiner and then back and forth between the medical examiner and the DA. Was she frozen? Were these remains at one point frozen? So it appears maybe she was in a freezer for a while. There's a lot of things that seem to have possibly gone on with this body for a period of time while Neo was operating, you know, as, you know, it's another Tuesday. The fact that we only have one person so far that seems to have publicly been forced to come forward. Obviously, he was extradited from Montana to go and testify to that grand jury. But we haven't really heard a whole lot from other folks yet. Is that because they're just keeping quiet because they need to under a gag order here? Or are more people keeping quiet because they don't want to face possible charges as well in this for having knowledge of possibly concealing a body or worse?
Well, one of the most interesting witnesses, at least in terms of the amount of time he was on the stand, was the manager. Having testified before the grand jury more times than I can count,
yeah.
I can't imagine being on the grand jury for 3.5 days, I think it was. Mm-hmm. What did he have to say? What all went on there? I think that that's going to be very interesting to see what his testimony is. But nobody's coming forward because they don't want to come forward. They're going to be quiet through this, hope there's a plea bargain and that they never have to come forward.
Yeah. What, any ideas? You know, part of the things that makes it difficult for everyone right now is no cause of death is being listed on as anything. Any theories about why there's delay on that or we're not getting that?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems is the condition of the body. The fact that it was so gravely decomposed. In fact, I don't even know if they've lined out exactly when. You know, that's going to take the forensic entomologist to look at the bugs because bugs overcome a body. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, you can actually judge by the bugs some of the length of time that the body's been decomposed. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them to tell.
Lots of questions. We're going to get into what happens next here in our next piece. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to join in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.